From Cheyenne to Cody, from Gillette to Rock Springs, this is Let's Talk Wyoming, your weekly double dose of Wyoming politics. Because politics may be complicated, but we're here to break it down and help you make sense of it all. I'm Amy Edmonds, a former legislator from Cheyenne. Thanks for being here. I am so excited to be sharing this inaugural podcast with you. It's been a labor of love, or as I like to say, it's been a little bit like getting an experimental airplane off the ground. There's been quite a few crashes, but it's finally taking flight. Okay, I've got a couple of housekeeping things to talk about before we start into the meat of the show. First, let's talk about the regular features you'll find here at Let's Talk Wyoming. I have a segment called Cutting the Tall Grass, where I'm going to work to debunk an idea that might be bouncing around Wyoming politics or on your social media pages, whether it's some political spin from a politician or any other political fact that folks are saying is perhaps more fiction. We're going to tackle it together as we cut through the tall grass and expose snakes. The other segment is what I'm calling my mailbag, and you might recognize that name. Listen, I'm a Rush Limbaugh girl. I loved listening to him, and I miss him still. So in his memory, I'm adding the mailbag, where I'll read comments from you, the listeners, and I'll be giving you a way to email or snail mail the show later on. Lastly, the schedule. So this is my first podcast. It's a Friday. Fridays, you'll find me giving you a recap and some discussion of the political news of the week in Wyoming. So on Fridays, you're going to hear just from me, and there's going to be quite a bit of really fun punditry. On a side note, I'm taping my Friday shows on Thursday, so if Wyoming happens to have some major Friday breaking news, you're probably not going to hear about it from me until the following week, unless I decide to do a special podcast on Monday, but those are going to be pretty rare, so just get prepared. My Wednesday podcast will be my chance to bring you a guest, and I'm really excited about that. The Wednesday podcasts are slated right now to be weekly. We may lessen that to every other week, just depending on the pace in which I can personally get folks interviewed. But anyway, we're going to be bringing past and present lawmakers, elected officials, maybe even some bigger political fish. You'll just have to wait and see. Folks from all corners of the state, I intend to bring them here and get them talking about all the things about Wyoming and Wyoming politics and everything that really matters to you. So that's the schedule. Let's get on to the meat of the show. The political season truly begins in Wyoming in the new year, with either the general session or the budget session. This year, the longer general session kicked off this week when the legislature was sworn in. So the week before, last week, previously, the Freedom Caucus had a press conference in the Capitol to announce their new plan again, which they have called the Five and Dime Plan, which I think is a rather bad choice of naming. But before I go on and kind of get into the Five and Dime Plan, I wanted to explain kind of who the Freedom Caucus are. For those of you who might be out there wondering, you've probably read some news stories and are trying to figure out who are these. They're a group of lawmakers who've decided to basically align themselves with the DC Freedom Caucus in Congress. So those folks, they created a state network group that basically has been starting to insert their politics into states one by one across the country. And they have a whole like big political network behind them with, you know, paid staff and like C4s to take anonymous donors and all the stuff, right? And they came into Wyoming a few years ago and got some fairly new lawmakers to agree to be part of their network and bring it here. And what these lawmakers get in exchange is they get a whole bunch of free stuff, right? They get free staff, they get all this stuff. Now, the Freedom Caucus statewide has done some fundraising that they like to try to tout as like, well, it's a big deal, they get fundraising. But the reality is, their main executive director, Jesse Rubino, is paid for by the DC people. And they have all kinds of staff that are either in DC or here for a short amount of time. And they're all paid elsewhere outside, from DC and from these, outside donors from all over the country. It has nothing to do with Wyoming people, Wyoming values. It's money coming in from outside. So since these lawmakers decided to agree to bring, the Freedom Caucus and form this caucus, and it was just a few at the very beginning, including our now Secretary of State, Chuck Gray, since then, the Freedom Caucus nationally has been pumping money into our elections to kind of help them to win seats. This past August, through a really, really nasty campaign season, using a ton of out-of-state money and some different out-of-state groups like Young Americans for Liberty and Make Liberty Win, they were able to take the majority alongside quite a few legislators who aren't actually publicly with the Freedom Caucus, but who have agreed to give them that majority. So the Freedom Caucus doesn't require lawmakers to make their membership with them public. So keep that in mind. And I'll talk more about that later because I have very strong feelings about that kind of lack of transparency. So anyway, the Freedom Caucus held a press conference last week again to announce their plan. Again, because the plan really had already been announced on their social media pages with some fairly slickly produced videos. This one was featuring Representative John Bear from Campbell County, and then a rather fluffy piece in, of all places, the New York Times.
Well, this just made New York City.
New York City.
Jake, it's time you switch brands.
So the New York Times, I mean, as if these guys couldn't get more East Coast, I will link the New York Times article in the show notes if you want to check it out. So the press conference was a rather interesting spectacle. I mean, it was pretty heavy on a kind of like, I don't know, cheap, high octane sort of clickbaity stuff, but really sparse on the actual policy discussions with really any massive detail. And I just, watching the press conference felt that this is going to be very indicative of things to come. It's going to be a lot of sort of all hat and no cattle, which we're, we understand that. There was some policy detail that came out when the press started asking questions, but it was very thin. And the presentation itself was really geared more towards showmanship than explaining, the things that they're going to do specifically. The one thing I think that was really, really noticeable, and this might just be a pet peeve of me, right? It might not be something, but, I really feel like these kind of first impression things really, really matter. The Rotunda was very sparsely populated. They had a lot more of their own guests than people who are actually there. And I know it was a press conference, but they had advertised it. And, there was an expectation that maybe the public would come. There really wasn't that many people in the Rotunda. I wasn't there. I was watching on their Facebook live feed. And here's where I have my major sort of issue in terms of, presenting yourself. First of all, there was only 12 people watching the feed the whole time that they had their press conference. I was one of them, so there was 11 others somewhere. And the live feed itself that was, created so that people around the state could potentially have watched this, the live feed was horrible. And I mean horrible. You could not hear it. Like, rule number one, when you stream anything for people to watch, you had better have good sound or no one's going to watch it. Like, I struggled through it. You could not hear. That's a terrible first impression. That's a terrible first impression. And it's the kind of rookie things that you should not be making. You have just won the majority. You should be showing the people that you know how to do things. And if you don't even know how to do a decent Facebook live stream, that doesn't instill a huge amount of confidence. It shows a real lack of experience. I mean, it's a big job having the majority in the Wyoming House of Representatives, and the voters deserve professionalism. It was not a good impression. It was a very, very bad impression. And listen, I'm not saying that more people would have watched, more than 12, if the sound had been better. I don't probably think that's the case. Most Wyomingites, if you ask them, could care less or have no idea even who the Freedom Caucus is, despite all of them going on and on and on about how they have a mandate and we have a mandate and we've won and we have a mandate. Most people don't care and don't know. Mandates are a really they're not a thing. Anybody with any political experience will tell you, never, never assume or even talk about having a mandate, right? The founders didn't believe in mandates. They believed that when you got elected, you were essentially, you know, doing a job interview, and that you had to prove yourself once you were elected to people that you could do the work you were supposed to do. Mandates are not a thing. People who think they have mandates generally start doing all kinds of stuff that allows them to spend the next 2 years becoming wildly unpopular. So, you know, I don't think a ton of Wyoming folks would have been watching despite the horrible sound, and despite the fact that they continually tell everybody that they have the entire state on their side. So we've got all the these new folks essentially trying to run the state now. And with it began this five and dime plan. So let me explain it. First of all, let me explain why it's called the five and dime. So the concept apparently, which again, terrible marketing, it's a terrible name because five and dime stores sold cheap goods. So this is basically the modern equivalent is the dollar store. This is essentially, Wyoming is essentially just, you know, handed over the House of Representatives to folks who want to give you dollar store quality policy, just like Five and Dimes, which sold cheap goods. So, and I think it's just, why someone in the room when the idea of Five and Dime didn't speak up and say, hey guys, this doesn't seem like a good idea is beyond me, but it speaks to lack of experience. It speaks to a lack of people willing to, you know, say, not a great idea. Not a great idea. Anyway, the point is they're saying five pieces keep areas of legislation in 10 days. That's why they called it or why they decided to say five and dime. But let me just say in terms of the overall idea that you're going to do five pieces of legislation in 10 days, as a former lawmaker, what this means is that you're going to have to break the norms of both chambers to do it. Okay? So I think we're, you know, I mean, like norm violations, who's surprised? I think we're going to see more and more norm violations from folks like this. We have nationally, we've seen it in the Republican Party. I'm a conservative. I'm not excited about norm violations because the reality is you can't push any bill through in 10 days in Wyoming, not without some extraordinary circumstances. When I served, it was very, very rare. It usually had to do with something either that was emergent or exceedingly urgent, or it was some budget item that needed to happen. And it's a good thing for the citizens of the state that that can't happen, right? It's a good thing in Wyoming that that our founders set it up this way so that you have to work bills deliberately in each chamber for a certain amount of time until they cross over to the other chamber. Shoving things through, that's a DC swamp move. I mean, it really is, but that's their move. That's part of this whole marketing shtick of the dollar store policy we're going to get, that they want to do this in 10 days. And I think that they're really concerned that they're not going to be able to produce, or that they've decided deliberately to set up unrealistic expectations so they can blame somebody else, right? Because when you live off of a kind of grievance politics that we're seeing become more and more popular and the Freedom Caucus has used, you don't really need to win. You need a boogeyman. You need a scapegoat. Someone you can blame for all of your troubles despite your own incompetence. That's the easiest way to do this. Set up an unreasonable goal that includes these norm violations, and lo and behold, when it doesn't happen, it's somebody else's fault. And in this case, that somebody else is going to land in the lap of the Senate, because the Senate will have to accept these bills prematurely. And remember, the Freedom Caucus only holds a majority on the House side. But I'm going to talk about the Senate later. We'll get to that. So the way it works is the House and the Senate, they work their own bills, and then we have what's called crossover, as I mentioned earlier. And that's the normal way. It's way past 10 days when crossover happens, and especially in this session, I think it's a 37-day session. Crossover is not going to happen most likely until like the 13th or the 15th of February. I'd have to check. But for this session, which means that, you know, they're going to have to change those things to get their five things through in 10 days. So the Senate's going to come into play, and we'll discuss them later. Let's get to the 5 points in this five and dime thing. So number one on their list is election integrity. Okay, I don't hate it, not necessarily, although I have quite a bit to say about sort of, you know, talking about Wyoming's elections as though they aren't safe, or that there's some kind of massive fraud that's going on, or that there's this hint. Just want to remind everybody, if you go to the National Heritage website, heritage.org, they have an election fraud map where they list out election fraud by state. For the state of Wyoming, we have had four cases since 2000. So for 25 years, Wyoming has seen four cases of real election fraud. But it's their number one issue. In some ways, it probably makes sense because, as I said earlier, Chuck Gray, who's now the Secretary of State, was one of their early members of the Freedom Caucus. And, you know, the Secretary of State has been acting as though he's running for governor since like the second he was elected Secretary of State. I mean, he's constantly out there haranguing the governor, you know, being very adversarial on state land board meetings. And so this is an issue that he's been hawking, right? So it makes sense to a certain degree. Number two, immigration accountability. This one I like. This one is super important. I agree. We need to be proactive and as proactive as we can be, of course. Constitutionally, the role of protecting our borders and enforcing our laws around immigration and citizenship falls chiefly on the federal government, not the states. As a matter of fact, it's rather an onerous burden to put on the states that we'd have to deal in any way with the mounting issues around our out-of-control illegal immigration. But some of these ideas are not bad. Although I think the reality is that the incoming administration is going to do far more in the White House for this topic than really anything Wyoming can pass. I think it's much less important now because of the fact that President Trump is about to be inaugurated, but it's their number two. Number three, again, it's very clickbaity in a sense because it's stop the woke agenda at the University of Wyoming. Like, I don't hate it. I get their point. But it's that kind of grievance politics that deserves really to be in the backseat, not driving the policy car as you're about to step into the general session and try to do things to improve the lives of regular Wyomingites, right? I understand what they're saying. And I think, quite frankly, the University of Wyoming deserves a serious wake-up call. It does. But I'm not sure how much this, you know, really deserves to be number three. It's clickbaity. Gets them headlines, gets them maybe on Newsmax, but is it in the order of importance for the people of this state and the things that we need to accomplish? I don't know. So number four, protecting our core industries. That's great. I mean, that's important. That's probably one of the most important things we can do given our state's reliance upon our core legacy mineral industries. We are an extractive state. I mean, that's the reality. But what they want to do with it though, the only solution they have under this subset is to ban woke investment strategies from the state's trust fund. So we're going to handicap our treasurer, Kurt Meyer, so we can make a point about a global commodity. And that's all we would be doing here, folks, is making a point. I mean, it's wrought with a lot of issues. And it could also potentially be really scary because our investment fund is in the billions and it is the biggest legacy we have for your children and your grandchildren in Wyoming right now. It's a big deal. We are an extractive state. When the minerals are gone, they are gone. These corpuses, the saving of the money that we've been doing since, you know, even before I served, building it up, it is a legacy deal that needs to happen. And I mean, I think the bill, I mean, I understand in some ways, listen, ESG is a garbage policy in so many ways. And I think this bill might have the potential to get better if they change some things. So my first reaction is that, like, you know, I hope they can change the bill, but that's it. That's all you brought under this whole subset. You brought banning ESG. That's all you're going to do for every hardworking coal miner in, you know, out there, all the folks in the natural gas fields, all those men and women working countless hours, the small energy companies trying to make money on marginalized wells. That's all you're going to do? Ban woke strategies? I mean, like, sure, it's another thing that'll probably get you on Newsmax or, you know, an article in the Federalist. I just don't see how it helps the people of Wyoming. And finally, number five, cutting taxes, real estate, real property taxes. This one I get. Like, it's very important. I mean, we've seen large increases in property tax across the state, and those increases have really harmed, particularly our more vulnerable, our elderly, you know, those folks who are struggling. They may already have their home paid off, but they're paying huge amounts of money in property taxes. And like, nobody enjoys those increases, right? I don't enjoy them. You don't enjoy them. My concern is that their plan is basically around two things. It's around the idea of a just across the board cut. And we have one of those hanging out there thanks to a ballot initiative that was done by a group of folks that are aligned with the Freedom Caucus. They went out and collected, you know, hired a company professionally and went out and collected a whole bunch of signatures and then came back and had them verified. That's going to be on the ballot, I believe, in 2 years. And that's a 50% across the board cut for property taxes. You have to keep in mind that property taxes are here to support our local communities. They're the ones who benefit from it. The state generally it gets its funds in sales tax. Property tax is there for our local communities. So that includes your public schools, your roads, infrastructure in your communities, those things. So really, really important stuff. So is funded through our property tax. As a conservative, local government closest to the people is really, really important. So how that government, how those people find a way to create a taxing authority and be able to tax themselves for the infrastructure they need is really important. So we have this across the board 50% cut that's hanging out there and is going to be on the ballot in 2 years. The Freedom Caucus in this session is looking at doing a 25% cut. So 25% less than the ballot initiative that's sitting out there. And they're talking about having a backfill, which, I mean, are we going to backfill forever? That essentially means that we're going to take from Peter to pay for Paul for an ongoing basis. That's a big deal. I mean, it's a big deal for how we're going to fund our local communities. And I think it also gets to the heart of some of the issues I have with this kind of big sort of across the board solution that I think is actually not a good solution. It gets to the integrity of our local control in our local communities. In other words, you know, when we took the food off of tax, there was all this promise of backfill that did not turn out well. Right, that backfill did not keep happening. And communities had to try to scramble to find ways to make themselves whole. I mean, in this case, I'm not for sure that I believe that we're going to have ever-ending backfill. And I think the whole question of what this means, particularly for our public schools and the funding of our public schools long-term, is significant. Because if the only solution that the Freedom Caucus has is to steal from our savings accounts to keep paying for this long term. And we're not even going to discuss the fact that there's a public school and education bill hanging out that the Supreme Court's going to rule on that could weigh heavily into some of what this means. If their only solution is to start eating into our savings, we are going to be in big trouble, folks. Okay, big trouble. And my other point is that backfill means that our local communities are reliant, dependent upon, you know, government, big government, Cheyenne, for help, for funds. And I'm just going to say that, you know what, when you have to go to government, when the state of Wyoming gets solutions from the federal government, the government higher than us, above us, there are always strings. Right? That you erode some of the sovereignty of the state. It's why a lot of folks, including myself, are very hesitant about federal funds. And yet we are going to subject our local communities to that same idea through this supposed, you know, big solution. Backfill will bring strings, and it'll certainly bring a dependency on the government above our local communities. The most important government for all peoples. Our founders understood this, conservatism from its founding to modern conservatism. We have pushed this and pushed this idea again and again and again. Government closest to the people is the most important. And our small communities and our local communities, they are the most important. They are the backbone of our state. They are what make up the culture in our state. So this whole idea of just cutting across the board, irregardless of community, irregardless of people. So what? Like, think about this. Billionaires with second homes in Teton County are going to get property tax relief. That's going to require us to send money to Teton County to backfill? I mean, right now, the property tax relief programs that we do have on the books are being used chiefly in Teton County. So we're going to backfill? There's a lot to discuss here in all of this around property taxes. And I'll just promise you right now, I'm going to do several episodes on this, particularly on my Wednesday podcast when I'm interviewing folks. We're going to talk about this in depth and really get down into the weeds so that you can get the nitty gritty about what we should be doing, because there is no denying that there's a property tax issue, that our property taxes have become an issue. But I am of the school of thought that the Freedom Caucus solution is going to kill the patient. Okay? The cure they're offering is going to, it has the potentiality to kill the patient. And we must not do that. We have to make, you know, much better decisions in terms of how we want to go about doing this. So we'll move on. But those are the 5 points in the five and dime. If you're asking yourself, and I asked myself this, like, how did they come up with this? It felt kind of focus groupy to me. I'm going to be honest with you. That's kind of what I thought, but that's not it. That is not it. They did a survey. This is what I've read in a news story that they said that they did some sort of statewide survey. And when I read that, I actually kind of, I picked up the phone and asked around, and some of the women in my subdivision and other people, nobody got the survey. Like, everybody I asked, nobody had heard of it, literally hadn't gotten the survey. And yet it's the thing that they used apparently to create their five and dime plan. So, here we are, the legislature has been sworn in. We're headed towards, finishing the very first week. I want to touch on two other things before we wrap up the show. Wanted to touch first on this idea of not just the backfill, but I just want to touch briefly on the idea of stealing from the savings account. This is another issue that I'm going to be talking extensively about. We'll have folks on talking about why our savings accounts are so important and why saving money is so important. But I talked for just very briefly that we have this 50% cut that came about with a ballot initiative. And I just want to say something about that, because let me tell you something. I am not a fan of ballot initiatives, okay? Ballot initiatives, but this is something the Freedom Caucus, the far-right Freedom Caucus-y people used and love. They love it, right? They think ballot initiatives are great. Ballot initiatives are something that liberal states do, not Wyoming, okay? Yet it's definitely part and parcel with these folks now. They suddenly want to go out and collect signatures, right? Like, I think that's how they got mushrooms in Colorado. I'm pretty sure half the legalized dope down there came through ballot initiatives. Nothing great happens through ballot initiatives. Let's be clear. I don't like them, okay? Don't like them. I'm never going to like them. It is not a conservative thing to do a ballot initiative. If you try to convince yourself that you're going directly to the people, democracy is not what we're about, okay? We've all heard the joke. Democracy is 3 men and a woman in a boat, and the 3 men say, let's rape the woman and let's vote. That's democracy. That's a ballot initiative. Our founders didn't want them. They understood the masses were dangerous and why they were bad. Not a fan of ballot initiatives. We can go on and on. I can quote chapter and verse historically of why they're not good. So that's hanging out there. Another tool for those folks who try to tell you that they're conservative. It's not a conservative tool. And speaking of things that aren't really conservative, let me circle back real fast to this idea that the Freedom Caucus Network nationally and here in Wyoming allow for anonymous members. So I just wanted to touch on it because it's just another thing that is I find so deeply wrong with this organization. You know, there's the old saying, sunlight is said to be the best of disinfectants. And it's a saying because the people, the voters, need to know who they're voting for fully and need to know what influences come to bear on the people they voted for and put into office. And anonymous memberships are not a conservative thing. And it's not something that we should be seeing from groups that keep telling us they're the only conservatives in the state, because that's not conservative. They should eliminate that immediately. If Rachel Rodriguez Williams wants to prove she's a conservative, these are the kinds of reforms she should do immediately. No anonymous memberships. If you are a member, you will say you're a member. And then let me just quickly talk about the Senate. I mentioned earlier that the Freedom Caucus does not have any placement in the Senate right now, and that is true. It's the reason that I think the Senate is going to be possibly a scapegoat for the Freedom Caucus if they don't get everything they want done, because, again, they don't have to succeed. They just have to have a scapegoat. Over in the Senate, there was a little bit of news this week. There was a bit of a kerfluffle, and it harkens back to this discussion about the Freedom Caucus. There's a small contingency of members that I think would want to be Freedom Caucus members. That's led by Senator Hicks, Larry Hicks, Senator Steinmetz, and Senator Boner. They put out a press release a couple months ago before the November general election, stating that he was running for president, and the other two were running for vice president and speaker pro tem. And they lost bigly, as we would say, bigly. I think 9 votes ultimately when the Republicans came together, the Senate Republicans came together to vote for the leadership. He lost. Since then, there's a kind of a coalition of members that came together to elect Senator Bo Bightman from up in Sheridan as president of the Senate, with Senator Tim Salazar as the vice president, and Senator Tara Nethercott from right here in my hometown as the majority floor leader. What I heard behind the scenes from some folks in the Senate is that they really were opposed to the idea that they would have to be told how to vote. This is one of the things about the Freedom Caucus, another one of the things that I think is a little disturbing, that representatives are very highly scripted and are very highly told what to do. And the Senate just didn't want to do that. They felt very strongly, or some of them that I have spoken to feel very strongly, that there's no place in Wyoming for being told how to vote by an outside influence like the Freedom Caucus. There's no sending text messages to me from some staffer in D.C. to tell me how to vote on a Wyoming bill that affects my community. And so I think that's an important point to know, you know, sort of ahead of time, that this is part of the play in the Senate, was this concern about the Freedom Caucus. And so fast forward to this week in the Senate, we had Senator Hicks get up and oppose the appointment of one of the chairs to the standing committee, Senator Eric Barlow, for chair of Labor Health. It was a kerfuffle. It was a little bit of sour grapes, sore loser ugliness that I hope we don't continue to see in the Wyoming Senate. The people deserve better than that. Now, the next day, Senator Hicks did rise and apologize. But this kind of sort of political play is not what the people of Wyoming deserve. And I hope that was the last time we see displays like that. And then lastly, before I turn to a few comments about the governor's State of the State address, which is the last major news item to discuss from these last 2 weeks, just wanted to talk for a second on something about backfill, because as I said, backfill really affects our small communities. And, you know, I'm a passionate supporter of small communities. I grew up in a town of 400, graduated from a high school class of 12. I know a thing or two about a small town, and I love them. Love them deeply. They are the cultural backbone of any state. They are the cultural backbone of Wyoming. If you ask most people who move here, they will tell you they came here for two things, for the small town feel and for the low population. And in doing things like these massive, you know, property tax cuts without any thought to a more surgical cut, we raise the real potential of seriously harming, if not, you know, destroying a lot of our small towns across the state. And so this whole promise of backfill, I want to remind you all of something that John Bair, Representative John Bair, who's the head of the Freedom Caucus at the time, he's still a member of the Freedom Caucus. He's now the appropriations chair for the House, on the House side, something he said about small towns in Wyoming.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to address what the good minority floor leader pointed out. He stated that if we don't support these small towns, that they may go away. And I think we should really think about that. If small towns are completely required to receive funding from either large cities or the state itself, should they exist? I'll tell you right now, I disagree with the minority floor leader.
So I'm pretty sure that Representative Bair would be pretty okay with a lot of small towns in Wyoming just going away, right? Like he is the extreme, I don't care, we're going to cut everything. If it means killing small towns, so be it. You know, the epitome of that. So when I say that this across the board solution feels very much like something that's going to kill the patient, I don't think I'm exaggerating. These things are really important in the state. And somebody said to me the other day, another point that I thought was really worth bringing up. They said, Amy, bringing down property taxes, particularly that 50%, but even the 25%, is going to make Wyoming look really, really tempting for more people from California and Colorado and all those other states who want to buy a home here and move into the state. And I think that's really true, especially given the fires we've just seen in California right now. I think it's 100% true. And this, again, will continue to fundamentally change the state of Wyoming, getting rid of our small towns, having more and more people from out of state come in and buying generally almost exclusively in our more urban areas, growing those urban areas larger and larger at the expense of our rural communities. This will fundamentally change the state, and it'll change our culture, and not to the good, most definitely to the bad. And this is the kind of solutions that the Freedom Caucus are bringing, and I think they're not good ones. I think they recognize, the one thing I will say is they recognize the problems, but I will also say that their solutions are inadequate to the task, right? So, and we know generally, even in the property tax sphere, that the property taxes, those assessments are already beginning to go down. We still need relief. There are lots of relief programs out there already. And this is, I think, what the legislature should be far more focused on. Things like Amendment A that did pass by the voters of the state that they could easily find some solutions to. And also beefing up the programs we already have, making sure they're fully funded. We have some other programs that they passed that are going to be coming online. We have a Veterans Relief Program. We have general relief programs. You know, folks can contact the revenue department at the state of Wyoming or their local assessors to find out the full gamut of things that are out there. Those are the kinds of solutions we should be looking at, a measured, disciplined approach. Okay, finally, lastly, governor's speech. So the governor gave his state of the state address on Wednesday before the legislature. And you know, it was very, speaking of measured, it was very measured. I thought it was a very measured address. It had a lot of no-nonsense kind of Wyoming stuff. I always enjoy the governor's state of the state because the governor really is the head of the state of Wyoming. And the governor always knows about all of these really interesting projects that, you know, maybe some folks who are affected in one community might know, but the rest of the state may not be aware. So he pointed out a lot of really interesting things that are happening around the state, and good stuff, you know, talked a lot about them. A lot about sort of this no-nonsense approach that he would like to see happen, that, you know, there's a difference between a good program and an easy or quick program. And I think, you know, I think that might have been a veiled thing at the Freedom Caucus. His speech was also aspirational, as governors should do. And Mark Gordon is extremely good at being aspirational. Of course, as is his wife, who has done an amazing job with her programs to help with food insecurity across the state. So overall, I thought it was a really good speech, great content, exactly what a state of the state speech should be. He got a good amount of standing applause as well as standing applause, which I thought was lovely. I mean, you know, the reality is Mark Gordon is a popular governor. I mean, that's just the truth. He is a popular governor, despite the Secretary of State, you know, waking up every morning and seeing himself as governor in the mirror. Mark Gordon is popular. He's a nice man. He gave a great speech. So since that speech on Wednesday, the House and Senate have been working bills. There's been some big ones. There was What is a Woman? That made it through Committee of the Whole. Some fairly important committee bills were killed by a lot of incoming freshman lawmakers. There was some mental health stuff that was killed. Funding for a Campbell County school thing was killed. Got a lot of stuff to talk about next week, guys. I'm going to break them down. Next week, I'll also kind of go through a list of some of the things, the bills that will follow from beginning to end. So get ready for that. But until then, thank you so much for listening to this inaugural episode of Let's Talk Wyoming. I'm excited to bring this to you. I'm excited to break down politics, make it much more digestible and interesting. Looking forward to the next one. Until then, have a great day, folks.